From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of June 2010. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, about the agricultural futures markets. Dan O'Brien of K-State University will be here to discuss ethanol. And then later in the program, in the second half, you can hear that online anytime you'd like at willag.org and on some of these radio stations. We'll talk with Ben Van Vliet about the flash crash of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby July wheat at $4.60 and 3/4, a penny and a quarter lower. September at $4.75 and 3/4, down 1 1/2 cents. And December soft red at $5.04 and 1/4, down 3 cents. Kansas City hard red at $4.94, down 5 3/4 in the July contract. July corn futures $3.51 and a half, 3 1/2 cents lower. September at $3.61, down 3 1/4. December 372, 2 3/4 lower, in the March corn at 385, down 2 1/2 cents. May futures 393 3/4, down 2 1/2. Soy complex, July beans $9.65 and a half, up 2 1/4. August at 9.58, a penny and a quarter higher. And then things went lower. September futures 942 and a half, down 1 1/2. November at 936, down 3, and January soybeans at 945. 3 cents lower on the day. July bean meal futures at $2.90, up $1.80. July bean oil at $37.93, down 12 cents. June live cattle futures $90.30, up 17 1/2. The August 52 1/2 lower at $88.80. August feeder cattle at $111.82 and a half, up 12 1/2. September at $111.75, up 30 cents on the afternoon. And July lean hogs today, $81.95, down a nickel. August futures there at $84.50, finished the day on a Tuesday afternoon, up 15 cents. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always hear us anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, July contract, $77.21 a barrel. Down 61 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.58 and 6 tenths, down 1 1/7 cents. Natural gas at $4.77 and 7 tenths, down 9 6/10 of a cent. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.11 and 1/10 of a cent, 3 4/10 lower. And the gold futures for the day up 20 cents at $1,239.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands just about 105 points lower at 10,337. The U.S. dollar at 86.11 is up 0.18, and the CRB index at 262.68 is down 1.01 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the Midwest looks like at this hour. Oppressive heat, some humidity throughout the day today and Wednesday, especially from Missouri to Ohio and southward, says Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. Extreme high temperatures in the upper 90s to around 100 will be possible both days, with Missouri and southwestern Illinois being the hottest. Some cooling will occur later this week with temperatures somewhat on Thursday and Friday. Temps would be back to more seasonally warm range of around the 80s and the low 90s. Thunderstorms will continue frequently in northern parts of the Midwest, while a less frequent and less significant rainfall pattern will occur in the south. Net drying is possible and even probable in Missouri into southern Illinois and western Kentucky for a while, despite a few showers. Another moderate risk of severe thunderstorms will occur in Nebraska, southeastern South Dakota, southern Minnesota, and Iowa today and tonight, with a few storms moving further east across the heart of the Midwest. More on the agriculture weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and talk to Don Day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Hi, Wayne. How are you today?
Well, good afternoon, Todd. It's not raining right now, so we're dry for the meantime.
I bet it comes your way soon enough, though.
I think we've got a little green coming right over our heads pretty soon. I saw some nasty weather in the northern part of the county last night. A little bit of hail, a lot of wind, and some corn snapped off last night in some areas north of Crawfordsville. So yesterday we were talking to one of our farmers down in the Clay City area, and he was trying to combine wheat, but he was waiting on the wrecker to pull his combine out.
Oh, there is nothing worse than a harvest in the wet, isn't there? Oh, my gosh.
We're seeing what we look at, not ideal conditions quite. We do have, it's better than a drought, but we think we get a little excess moisture here now. And it's really starting to show up a little bit in the beans, Todd. Of course, that's where a little bit of the strength showed up today. But all in all, the noon weather forecast, at least the American model, seem to be ideal for growing crops.
Yeah, the southern part of Iowa, according to the statistician, and we'll hear this a bit later in the program yet today, must be in pretty rough condition. Have you heard much about that? Apparently they haven't been able to get into the field at all to do any kind of work for the entirety of this month.
Ian, we know that there's been areas out there like that. We're not real familiar with that area and don't have any customers right there, so whatever. But I do know that there has been many areas where it's been good 3 weeks before much of anything's been done.
What's the chatter you're hearing on the squawk box or on the phone from folks out of Chicago and the kinds of fundamentals they'll be looking at in the next couple of weeks to move the marketplace?
Well, I think that, number one, they'll be looking to see, how many acres maybe did not get planted as we look at some of the prevented planting stuff that's coming closer here, as long as we get to the 1st of July, as far as when they can actually, say that they didn't plant any beans or that way or put them on the prevented plant thing. We also are going to be looking at the crop rains as they continue to develop that way. But most of all, I think we're going to be watching the Chinese weather to see if the dry air over there gets any weather along the way and whether we see any blocking fronts and whether we see a matchup of the for the temperatures of what it's going to be during pollination time. Because even if we do have enough water, if it's 90 degrees or over, while we can cook the pollen as far as even with adequate moisture, Todd. So that's one of the things we want to be watching very closely.
Well, on the prevented plant and the crop insurance, those days have now passed in the whole of the state of Illinois, I suspect in Indiana as well, though I don't know that for sure. What does it mean?
We're in the late planting period, though. They can still plant, but we're past the last planting date, or not the last planting date, but the regular planting dates. We can't now, actually, if you do not get anything in the ground, you can go back in and plant after July 1st and still call it prevented plant.
And so you lose, what, 1% a day or something
1%
like that?
1% a day here now, and we're going on to that. So all in all, basically, if it were good conditions, we would probably still be out there planting beans in that way. But we remember only 1% by the national average for what should be planted out there at this point in time. And so most of these acres that aren't planted are basically, or have in the past, been double crop beans, Todd.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon.
Support for agricultural programming comes from the Westchester Group, an agricultural asset management firm specializing in land auctions for farmland, timberland, and recreational land. More information on upcoming auctions is at westchester-auctions.com or at 800-607-6888.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Yesterday afternoon, USDA released its latest crop progress report. It showed that nationally, 75% of this year's corn crop was reported in good to excellent condition. That's down slightly from the ratings last week, but 5 points better than the same time last year. That due to above average rainfall that caused flooding in some fields and hailstorms that shredded leaves in others. The portion of the crop rated good to excellent declined 1 to 3 percentage points from last week in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. Those are the 5 top corn-producing states in the nation. They also produce the top bean yields and total production. By the way, the week's end, soybean producers had planted 93% of the 2010 crop. That's nationwide, 2 percentage points ahead of last year, slightly behind the 5-year average. Wet fields hampered field work and limited planting progress to 3 percentage points or less during the week in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. Again, the 5 largest soybean producing states. Nationwide emergence advanced to 87% complete by June the 20th, 5 points ahead of last year, slightly behind the 5-year curve. Winter wheat heading of the wheat crop advanced 3 points during the week, leaving progress at 91% complete, 3 points behind last year, 5 points behind the 5-year average. By the week's end, producers had harvested 17% of this year's winter wheat crop. Now, here are those 5 top corn-producing and soybean-producing state statisticians with their regional updates.
This is Brad Parks, Deputy Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly Crops and Weather Report for the week ending June 20th, 2010. During the past week, Iowa received frequent showers and thunderstorms. Northern Iowa reported storms producing high winds, knocking down trees, and hail shredding corn leaves. Aside from the severe weather, the warm, humid days provided ideal growing conditions, especially since soils contain ample moisture. Once again, conditions gave farmers little opportunity to continue with field work. Reporters in southern Iowa indicate operators have been unable to get into fields the entire month of June. This halt in field work is becoming a concern for farmers still needing to spray since weeds are starting to pressure crops. Crops planted on ground that drains well are handling the excess rainfall and remaining in good to excellent condition. However, low-lying areas and poorly draining fields are ponding with crops showing signs of stress. Corn in these areas are turning yellow and varying dramatically in height. Soybeans are having growth stunted and being completely drowned out by ponds. Corn rated 2% very poor, 5% poor, 18% fair, 52% good, and 23% excellent. Nearly all the soybeans have been planted and 94% has emerged, which is equal to last year and 1 percentage point behind the 5-year average. Soybean condition rated 2% very poor, 6% poor, 23% fair, 51% good, and 18% excellent. Again, this has been Brad Parks, Deputy Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the week crop weather report for the week ending June 20th, 2010. Thank you.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office. Soggy field conditions are taking their toll on standing crops and prohibiting producers from applying much-needed herbicides. Statewide, temperatures averaged 76 degrees, which was 2.9 degrees above normal, while precipitation averaged 2.55 inches, also 1.56 inches above normal. And it should be no surprise there were only 1.6 days suitable for field work. Growing degree day units since May 1 ended the week at 943, which was 96 units ahead of the historic average. This being the result of the continued above-normal temperatures Illinois has experienced the last 4 weeks. Statewide, corn emergence advanced to 99%, compared to 97% emerged last year and 99% for the 5-year average. 1% of the corn crop was reported silked, the same as the 5-year average. The average height of emerged corn now stands at 42 inches, well above last year's 16 inches, and 30 inches for the 5-year average. Overall, the corn crop was rated in 69% good or excellent condition, down 3 points from last week. Soybean planting made virtually no progress last week at 92% complete, compared to 78% planted last year and 92% for the five-year average. 87% of soybeans have emerged, compared to 64% a year ago and 85% for the five-year average. 2% of the crop was reported blooming, the same as the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 62% good or excellent condition, down 6 points from last week. The soft red winter wheat crop was reported at 60% ripe, compared with 38% 1 year ago and 56% for the five-year average. And wheat harvest now stands at 20% complete, compared to 5% last year and 27% for the five-year average. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with a crop weather report for the week ending June 20, 2010. Heavy rainfall in eastern counties causing flooding and standing water in low-lying areas. In addition, hail and strong winds caused damage to isolated fields and structures. Due to the wet conditions, field work such as spraying herbicides and side dressing nitrogen were behind schedule. The quality of hay being put up has also suffered. Corn conditions rated 78%, good or excellent, below last year's 83, but above the 77 average. Soybean planting neared completion at 99%, while sorghum planting was at 91%. Dry bean planting was 94% complete, and prosa millet planting was at 44%. Wheat conditions rated 70%, good or excellent, below the 74% of last year, but well above the 50 average. Wheat turning color was 28%, with most of the coloring in the Southeast District. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending June 6, 2010. Temperatures returned to the seasonal averages after nearly 2 weeks of above normal temperatures. Repeated light rains prevailed during the week, with the south central and southeast regions of the state receiving over 1.3 inches on average. There were reports of isolated hail. Corn was 98% emerged with an average height of 8 inches. Soybeans were 98% planted with 83% emerged and an average height of 3 inches. Corn condition was rated 92% good to excellent, unchanged from the previous week. And soybean condition was rated 83% good to excellent, up 1 percentage point from the previous week. 59% of the spring wheat and 60% of the barley were jointing, with 2 and 8% heading, respectively. 71% of oats was jointing, and 11% was heading. All three crops were rated with at least 90% good to excellent condition. Sunflower planting neared completion with 98% planted, compared to 73% last year and 86% for the five-year average. The first canola and green pea condition reports for the year rated 82% of the canola in fair to good condition and 97% of the green peas in good to excellent condition. That's the weekly crop weather report for the week ending June 6, 2010. I'm Doug Hartwig, Director of USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana, and this is the crop weather report for the week ending June 20th. Unrelenting storms brought severe winds and hail that destroyed some isolated fields during the week. The persistent storms damaged some buildings and cornfields. While the warmer weather has aided most corn and soybean plants, the significant precipitation has left some fields with extensive ponding that left field crops struggling. The high temperatures and humidity have led to increased reports of rust in some winter wheat fields. Despite the weather issues, the winter wheat harvest has progressed in some southern counties. Precipitation ranged from 0.7 to 4.88 inches. Temperatures averaged from a high of 96 to a low of 58 degrees. Corn condition for the week was rated at 68% good to excellent, down 2 points from a week ago and compared with 62% from last year at this time. 91% of the intended soybean acreage has been planted, compared to 89% for last year and 94% for the five-year average. 85% of the planted soybean acreage has emerged, ahead of the 77% recorded for last year and slightly behind 87% for the five-year average. Soybean condition for the week was rated at 67% in the good to excellent category. 15% of the winter wheat acreage is harvested, compared with 5% last year and 12% for the five-year average. Winter wheat condition is rated at 68% good to excellent, same as last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the Indiana NAS Field Office.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We are paid for in part by your financial contributions. Please do visit willag.org and pledge your financial support by June the 30th. We need everything in the bank so we can continue our progress in the coming fiscal year. At willag.org, pledge your financial support.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity Smart Stacks corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Time to take a look at our weekly energy markets. Dan O'Brien of K-State University is with us this afternoon from his office in Manhattan, Kansas. Thanks for being with us.
Yes. Hello, Todd.
You just authored another article, and you sent it to me not too long ago, entitled U.S. Distillers Grain Supply and Use Under E10, E12, E15. We all, at least that listen to this program, understand what that means or have an idea of the E10, 12, and 15 and how U.S. EPA will be possibly changing the amount of ethanol that goes into the gasoline supply in the future. You did some numbers work to come up with what that might mean with distillers dried grains and ending stocks for corn. What'd you find?
Well, all of these steps are steps to make carefully in terms of U.S. energy policy with an eye towards not just the immediate impacts upon ethanol usage, but also the potential second and third steps of what could happen with regard to the overall supply-demand balances for U.S. corn and distillers grains together. There's a lot of discussion now, of course, about E12 or E15, either one. When you look at what would happen, it's likely that if you make the assumption that we'll preserve domestic uses of corn, i.e. livestock feed use, ethanol use for sure, non-ethanol food seed industrial usage, if we'll likely preserve those and yet not want ending stocks to fall too much below, say, a billion bushels, then the odd man out would probably be U.S. corn exports. Under E12, under the assumptions we have, we'd be looking at about a 500 to 600 million bushel reduction in U.S. Corn exports, and still decreases of 100 to 150 million bushels in ending stocks. If you go to E15, there would be some strong ramifications to think about with regard to the impact on exports. We could see reductions, if these assumptions are correct, of 1.5 billion bushels or more in U.S. corn exports, and as much as still 100 to 150 million bushels reduction in ending stocks. And those in and of themselves aren't bad issues, but particularly as you move above E12 to E15, there are some sizable shifts that would probably happen in the world export market for corn, and given the strong leadership role of the U.S. in providing supplies, you know, we provide 50-60% of corn exports. There's some important things to think about in terms of ramifications.
Dan, thanks so much for the discussion.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Dan O'Brien is with K-State University, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. When we return, we'll talk with Don Day about the weather forecast. And then we'll take up the flash crash with Ben Van Bleet.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. In business news, the Supreme Court says it will hear J.P. Morgan Chase & Company's appeal over a lawsuit accusing the bank of violating federal law by failing to notify credit card holders before raising interest rates due to late payments or defaults. At issue is whether a federal regulation required notice when a creditor increased the rate on a credit card in response to a cardholder default and in accord with a contract. Oil World Today says that China is likely to buy more soy oil from the U.S. if it cannot resolve a trade dispute with major supplier Argentina. China in March blocked imports of soy oil from Argentina, the world's largest exporter, after the South American country imposed anti-dumping duties on some Chinese products. The issue remains unresolved. Earlier this month, the U.S. booked its first sale of soy oil to China since April of 2009. European Union regulators are taking a closer look at Swiss group Syngenta's plan to buy Monsanto's hybrid sunflower seed business, suggesting stronger remedies may be needed to ease competition concerns. Syngenta unveiled the $160 million deal with Monsanto in August last year. The European Commission, which had been due to decide on the takeover yesterday, announced it has opened an in-depth investigation and will make a final decision in late October. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is here to take up the agricultural weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Rain again here in Urbana-Champaign. What's the likelihood it will continue?
Well, pretty good. While we don't see a large series of storms slow moving on through, we see still several small weather systems that will, at least here in the next, let's say through the rest of this week and into the weekend, bring occasional thunderstorm chances to most of the Midwest and Corn Belt. Coverage should be pretty good. There will be some pockets of real heavy rain with some of these thunderstorms, especially for some of the northern plains. We could see some big rains in South Dakota, portions of Nebraska, portions of Iowa and Minnesota, while the thunderstorms, still possibly heavy, will be a little bit more scattered across the Midwest.
Producers in this part of the world sure would like a little relief. Do you see anything further out?
In the longer term, I do. It looks like high pressure is going to get a little bit stronger, going to build some heat across a good section of the country. In fact, this is the first time we've really seen a signal of at least more than just a regional basis, but more of the lower 48 basis, warmer summertime conditions overspreading all areas. We see that developing next week and into early July. So we do see some hotter weather coming that will be associated with drier conditions as well. Now, I'm saying drier, not completely dry, but we will see some relief for some folks that would like things to dry out a bit.
And maybe you should take up the southern part of Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, and then on into the hard red winter wheat growing regions where they're beginning the harvest season.
Yeah, and now for the hard winter red winter wheat areas, the only thing they're going to be facing probably is some thunderstorm activity. I don't see enough of it that's going to cause too many harvest delays, but that'll be the only thing they'll be fighting. Now, for southern Illinois, southern Indiana, at least between now and the weekend, the frequency and the potential for thunderstorms still fairly high and wet after that getting a bit drier.
And then if you'd take up China and how their weather is progressing for their growing season, please.
Well, they're starting to see it getting a little bit warmer over in China as well, and precipitation is going to be focused definitely in the central and the southern areas. Some areas of northeast, north center of China look to be fairly dry, but the prospects of rain, especially in the short term, will be fairly high over the southern, southwestern, and southeastern areas of China.
Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. You can always hear him again if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming in their entirety, including the opening, the closing, the pre-opening, midday updates, commodity week too. It's all for free and all at willag.org. Coming up next on most of these radio stations and online at willag.org, if not, the farming world. Today we'll talk with Ben Van Vliet about the flash crash of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Rebecca King in Galesburg at 309-341-5007. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
This is the Farming World news and information from the University of Illinois and the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, the flash crash that happened with the Dow Jones Industrial Average earlier in the year scared the world. Today we're going to talk a bit about it and high-speed trading with Benjamin Van Vliet. He's a lecturer at the Illinois Institute of Technology Stewart School of Business. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Van Vliet. We do appreciate you taking the time. First, why don't you outline what a flash crash is and what happened on that fateful day to the Dow Jones Industrial Average?
Well, first of all, the term flash crash was something that the media assigned. I think somewhat in haste, in a way to sort of maybe sensationalize the fact that somehow automated trading systems caused this crash. And while it did happen very quickly, in retrospect, the association with automated trading systems turns out to be incorrect. So that's how it got the name. It harks back to what was called flash trading, which was a scandal about a year or so ago that occurred with automated trading systems. So I think in some ways the term was invented to try and associate this crash with the sort of seedy business of flash trading, which was a story that was popular in the media about a year or so ago. So
then tell me how this crash occurred and why.
Well, you know, as best we can figure, a large institutional client came into the market and attempted to sell large amounts of stock and futures in order to rehedge their very large position. And so when this very large order came into the market, you'll probably recall that at that time, the market was already jittery because of the things happening in Europe and the Greek problems in their economy. And so the market was already jittery. And when this large order came in, it triggered a lot of stop orders that were already in the market. And for a couple of minutes there, all of the volume that came into the market was sell orders, and the buyers backed away. And so for a brief moment, we had no buyers and all sellers, and that's when you get a crash.
Can you tell me more about the order? What do we know about the original order that was put in? Was it larger than expected? Was it an accident or a mistake in the way of an extra zero or more than one extra zero?
As best we can tell, there was no mistake. It was just a very large institution, and I'm not quite sure which one. I'm not sure if anybody is, but that sort of started a cascading of selling. So when other market participants are trying to protect their long positions, they might do that with sell stop orders, so that if your asset declines in price, it'll automatically get sold. So when a large order came into the market, which was done, you know, with intent to reposition this large institution and their risk exposure, it triggered lots of other automatic sell orders that then sort of overwhelmed the market. And in some ways, then the fact that the New York Stock Exchange actually suspended trading briefly actually exacerbated the problem, because all of this volume then sort of panics and immediately looks for other venues to execute. And for a while there was no buy volume, and all the volume was looking for sort of selling at an instant. But that kind of market scenario is not caused by automated trading. It has nothing to do with automated trading. It's simply a scenario similar to what happened in 1987, that for whatever reason, when everybody wants to sell at the same time, people who might otherwise be interested in buying might step back, take a deep breath, and say, I'm not sure what's going on here. I don't feel like buying now when everyone else in the world wants to sell. And so you get sort of a vacuum, and the price can drop precipitously. To me, what's interesting is how fast things came back. Within a couple of minutes, the entire market turned around, and we were basically back to where we were. I think the market was down about 300 points before the flash crash happened, and then within a couple of minutes of it happening, we were right back to being down 300 points. So, you know, sort of cooler heads prevailed, and the market corrected itself very quickly. And just to continue the conversation, I think there's at least as much evidence to support the argument that automated trading is what sort of saved the trading day as there is evidence to say that automated trading somehow contributed to the flash crash. And I think that there's been a significant decline in the media coverage of automated trading since we sort of figured out what happened. And I think part of that is because we realized that automated trading systems actually helped alleviate the situation rather than exacerbating the problem.
How do you think they did that?
Well, I think for two reasons. The first one is that people have long recognized that human emotions are part of the problem in trading, that our being human gets in the way of rational decision making. Fear and greed prevent us from making good trades. And to be sure, if you're a professional trader, or you trade intraday, you understand that downside discipline and all these things are extremely important. But automated trading systems don't have to worry about emotions. They're sort of much more rational, purely rational, and able to calculate values and theoretical values and future probabilities of payoffs much more rationally than humans are. So when everyone else is running for the door in a panic sense, the computers are much more capable of sort of looking at the situation rationally and making rational trading decisions. And so in this case, I think that that the automated trading systems saw the situation for what it was, which was an irrational move to the downside and an excellent opportunity to buy. And that's why we saw the market come back so quickly. I think we shouldn't be so much concerned about how fast it dropped, but we should be happy with how fast it rallied back. And I think that's due to automated trading systems. The second thing is that most of these algorithmic trading systems bet against the occurrence of extreme volatility. In other words, when things start to go haywire, and the market is, and everyone is selling, in financial markets, we tend to talk about mean reversion, that when things get sort of too far away from what the real price is, we expect them to come back to the real price. And so most automated trading systems sort of bet on mean reversion. So when everyone else is selling and pushing the market too far down, it's the automated trading systems that are calculating the probability of mean reversion and betting against sort of extreme moves. So in that respect, you know, in both those respects, I think there's, like I say, I think there's a better argument to be made for the fact that automated trading systems saved the day rather than made the problem worse or even caused the problem.
When we see the floor, the trading floor, they're always filled with people. Is there open outcry still taking place?
Sure, on those trading floors? Sure, but the lion's share of the volume is all done electronically now, both here and in other parts, both in Chicago, in New York, and other parts of the world. So while you do still see some traders in their funny colored coats walking around, there's probably a tenth of those people as there were 15 years ago. So some of the contracts do trade, and particularly in the case of options, futures options, most of that business is still done in the pits, just sort of because of the nature and the volume of trading and the sort of specialized trades that are done in that sector of the markets. But most of the futures trading, certainly the lion's share of the number of trades, a vast majority of the number of trades, maybe sometimes some of the larger orders go to the floor. But most trades are done electronically now.
Yeah, most of the futures for commodity trade is done electronically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just to be like, clear, we understand that here, that that's the case, and we understand that and how quickly that moved from open outcry to electronic trading in the last 3 years. And there was a six-month period where it really moved fairly quickly. The reason I ask about the open outcry in New York was I'd like you to compare, and you started to just a bit, the fall, this fall, to the previous big fall when we lost, about 500 points, I think. And what the difference between those two might be because of electronic trading or automated trading and the open outcry trading that was taking place then?
Yeah, well, you know, back then when the market fell 500 points, but of course that was a 25% move or thereabouts, I think, back in 1987. And back then all the trading was done in the pits. And you know, literally when that kind of market action happens, most of the traders in the pit just walked out of the pit and left. And rather than jump into a situation that might be potentially ruinous for them personally, they just walked. So you have the very physical scene of people walking away from trading. But in the flash crash, you have a similar kind of thing. But because most of the markets are done over electronic networks, it's sort of not a physical walking away, but an electronic walking away. But certainly algorithmic trading didn't create this scenario of people walking away from markets they think are too risky and don't want to trade in. But because the lion's share of the trading is now generated actually by automated systems, you saw them jump back in very, very quickly, whereas you know, in 1987, it took a couple of days. Well, we came back very quickly the day after the crash in 1987. You know, it still took us several months before we sort of climbed our way back to where we had been before. Whereas this year, you know, we climbed all the way back in a matter of minutes. So in that respect, markets behaved very well. And I might add that you see a lot of discussion about circuit breakers in markets, and I think that's just only exacerbates the problem. The best thing for markets to do to work themselves out is to keep trading, and having circuit breakers or some external force interrupt trading or disrupt trading in order to have cooler heads prevail in general, I think only is going to exacerbate the problem. I mean, here we had the market go down 1,000 points and bounce right back up within a day, and while the number of points, 1,000 points, makes a big splash in the newspaper, it was only a 10% move to the downside, which relative to 1987 wasn't that even though it was double the number of points, it was less than half the percentage amount of the crash of 1987.
We're talking with Ben Van Bleet this afternoon. He's at the Illinois Institute of Technology Stewart School of Business about the Dow Jones Industrial Average crash that happened earlier this year. We'll talk more about that in a moment here on The Farming World.
It's National Chocolate Eclair Day. The eclair probably originated in France during the 19th century. The first English language recipe for the eclair appeared in the Boston Cooking School cookbook in 1884. On this day in agricultural history in 1633, Galileo was forced by the Inquisition in Rome to renounce his theory that the Earth revolved around the sun. By the way, Galileo was the first to see the rings of Saturn, named after the Roman god of agriculture. But he never quite unlocked the idea that he was seeing rings. In 1792, James Nielsen was born, a Scottish inventor. He introduced the use of a hot air blast instead of cold air for the smelting of iron. His process reduced the amount of coal needed and increased efficiency to satisfy the demands of the infant rail and shipbuilding industries. In 1932, Bernhard Bang died, a Danish veterinarian. He discovered the cause of contagious abortion in cattle. Bang was instrumental in showing that tuberculosis could be transmitted by cow's milk and in developing isolation techniques. And in 1940, Peter Koppen died, a German meteorologist and climatologist. He is best known for his mapping of the climatic regions of the world. His system remains useful because it demands easily obtained data, such as monthly mean temperatures and precipitation. And that's a look at this day in agricultural history.
This is the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we're talking with Ben Van Bleet. He's a lecturer at the Illinois Institute of Technology's Stewart School of Business. We had just taken up, Mr. Van Bleet, the idea that shutting down trade might not be a good thing when you have a violent crash, even a 10% crash, in the Dow Jones Industrial Average in New York. Why is that the case? Is it because automated trading, as you suggested, doesn't have feelings in particular like humans might, and so it's not as scared to get back in? And frankly, it works so quickly that you don't have a chance as a human to tell it not to get back in?
Yeah, you know, the most recent research that we have is that 70% of the trading volume in the United States is driven by automated systems. 70%. So when a lawmaker stands up and says, you know, we need to have circuit breakers so that we can have a cooling off period and people can get a level head, it's like, well, you know, who needs to get a level head? It's all driven by computers, you know. So to say we need circuit breakers so that, you know, human emotions can sort of, you know, cooler heads can prevail, or kind of thing. It's like, well, none of this stuff is driven by emotional humans anymore anyway. So, you know, to me, the best thing to do is to keep trading and let the market work it out for itself. And sort of the quicker you let that happen, the better it's going to be for everybody in the long run. If you halt trading, you're going to force all sorts of margin calls, and it isn't going to prevent the change in perceptions and the change in values in any way. And you're better off letting the market work it out. And, you know, things happen so fast now, you know, it's highly likely that things may get worked out within a couple of minutes or a couple of hours rather than a couple of days or a couple of weeks.
So if it's all based on mathematics, does it really do a good job of setting the market? I mean, it would seem that it might just be a self-fulfilling prophecy on Fibonacci numbers and all sorts of mathematics that the automated systems would be looking at.
Well, yeah, there's all kinds of different strategies, and not everyone is looking for millisecond style trading. I mean, there are certain kind of trading where technology lends itself, for example, in sort of, you know, instantaneous arbitrage situations, where the fastest person to trade is the one that gets the profit. Those kinds of strategies lend themselves very well to instantaneous execution that's only available through automation. There's many, many other strategies that automated trading systems can look at that involve hundreds of different instruments. So you may be trading the futures contract on the S&P and at the same time trading the 500 stocks on the New York Stock Exchange that comprise that that index. And so while it seems to someone that I'm buying, if I'm buying a futures contract, I'm buying because I think the price is going to go up. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's the person who's or the machine that's selling to me is somehow manipulating the market and taking advantage of me. It's highly likely that the machine is playing an entirely different game, and the reason they're selling to you isn't necessarily because they think that the price is going to go down. It's because they have some other arbitrage opportunity that they're trying to take advantage of. So there's all kinds of different strategies, thousands of different kinds of strategies that these machines can implement. However, you have to realize that if you buy stock in IBM today, and IBM, the prospects for IBM's business goes up, and we expect their earnings to increase, and they have a good year and report good earnings, the stock is going to go up. For fundamental reasons, not because of any automated or mathematical reasons. So if you're buying stocks and you're buying for the long term, automated trading in the meantime isn't going to make any difference. The price is still going to go up if the company does well.
So if you're a long-term trader, it's fine, but trying to beat the automated system on your own as a day trader would be kind of tough to do.
Well, you know, short-term day trading has always been difficult.
Well, it's always been difficult, but it's always been handled. I mean, this is what we call the liquidity in the market, and you're telling me that the liquidity in the market's been replaced by automation.
For the most part, that's true. Most of the short-term trading.
And is that okay? I'm simply asking the question: is that okay?
Sure. Because it narrows the spreads for all of us. So you may recall back in the 1990s when you wanted to buy stock, you could buy stock in, heck, I was a stockbroker here in Chicago, and I used to sell Teleb stock, which was a great stock in the 90s, and the stock used to have a 50-cent spread between the bid and the ask at times. And now probably the spread on Teleb's is, certainly under 5 cents. But the liquidity providers have to be allowed to make money somehow. And otherwise, they're not going to provide liquidity. It used to be that liquidity providers made money by artificially sort of colluding to keep the spreads wide. But when the government made that, took them to task for that, and spreads were forced to close, they made up for it through automation and increased volume.
We're out of time. One very short answer to this question. Is there any reason that trade should be halted?
Absolutely not. I'm 100% against halting of trading. Now, that having been said, none of us can forecast or see what situations in the future.
Ben Van Vliet is a lecturer at the Illinois Institute of Technology, Stewart School of Business. Joined us here on The Farming World. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good afternoon. And that's all she wrote.